This is a podcast from thebuglepodcast.com.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to another Bugle audiobook sub-episode. Unfortunately, we are still unable to record new Bugles at the moment for non-work reasons that will, in due course, become clear. However, before I move on to the next chunk of the classic economics textbook and reference work Does Anything Eat Bankers by Professor Andrew Zaltzman of the Mammon School of Financialnomics, I do have an announcement to make about the future of the Bugle. When we resume after our current hiatus, whenever that is, we will be changing to monthly Bugle episodes. Clearly the recent situation, as a number of you have let us know via Twitter, has not been ideal. So the plan is now to do one full-on, big-time, old-school, newfangled, no-bananas-unpeeled Bugle each month. I hope that's okay with you. Clearly it's not as good as four proper Bugles a month, but I think we can all agree that that has proven to be no longer possible. And one proper full-spec Bugle a month is better than A, no Bugles at all, and B, two half-assed Bugles a month. Especially as you will also be getting two satirist-for-hire live recordings each month as well, plus occasional sundry other episodes such as this one. Any ideas for what goes in these sundry other episodes will be considered, possibly ignored, but definitely considered. Do send any ideas to the usual Bugle email address. Quite when we start the new monthly Super Bugles is still unclear. I hope the new arrangements do find favour with you, Buglers. It will hopefully enable us to carry on fixing all known problems on this sweet old planet of ours for the foreseeable future. And please do send in requests for the Satirist for Hire shows, even if you aren't actually coming and or live in the wrong continent or hemisphere or have some other valid excuse, to satirise this at satiristforhire.com. I will address the best of those requests in these shows, in between the excerpts from the live gigs. Details of forthcoming shows will appear at the end of this sub-bugle. Anyway, back to the audiobook. With Greece about to vote between a disastrous rock and a cataclysmic hard place, essentially deciding whether they get to sledgehammer themselves in the balls or get sledgehammered in the balls by someone else, it's a good time to look back to late 2008, when the financial fuckstorm was already chundering its unholy seed all over the world. And I was writing a completely uninformed book about it slightly too quickly. We pick it up with a question that gets right to the very heart of everything that has gone wrong, right, and very, very wrong in the world economy over recent years.
Name:
Derek Scrutch.
Age:
25.
Occupation:
ATM analyst.
Location:
Macclesfields.
Question:
a mate of mine in the pub told me the problem is that the whole financial world has suddenly got the jitters because of the sudden and belated realisation that while there appears to be a lot of money in the world, almost none of that money actually exists. Is this true?
Derek, yes, it is sadly true that most money is pretend. This has come about because banks realised that they could exploit their reputation as dullards to lend out around 30 times the amount of money they actually own without anyone raising an eyebrow, let alone an objection. Furthermore, when you take, say, £10 or $20 or however much, no need to be flash about it, from your bank's ATM machine, your bank will have borrowed that money from another bank, who will in turn have borrowed it from another bank, who would have borrowed it from another bank, who would have borrowed it off the International Monetary Fund, who would have borrowed it off a high-interest emergency nail-your-nuts-at-the-dinner-table payday loan company, who would have borrowed it off Germany, who would have borrowed it off itself, who would have borrowed it off the World Bank, who would have borrowed it off Lewis Hamilton, who will have borrowed it off Warren Buffett, and so on and so on and so on. Until when you take your cash from your ATM machine, what you are essentially getting is homeopathic money. It contains barely a trace of the original cash, but some absolute certifiable nutjobs insist it still works exactly the same. I do hope that recent events have rather cast some doubt on this theory.
Secrets of the Banking Industry Fat Box. As part of their initiation, new recruits at America's top investment banks have to kill a baby seal by slamming its head repeatedly in a photocopier. 3 out of 4 workers in the banking sector psych themselves up for work on Monday mornings by watching the opening battle scene from Saving Private Ryan. 96% of retired professional footballers who have turned to a career in banking describe the feeling of selling a mortgage to a first-time buyer as being, quotes, better than scoring the winning goal in the cup final whilst making sweet, sweet love to that woman from the TV series The Manageress. During their lunch breaks, the staff in all major high street banks congregate in secure vaults, lock themselves in, open the safes, tip all the money into a giant paddling pool, strip to their regulation bank-issue underwear, and writhe around like snakes chanting, money, 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 I've got cash on my tummy. The real reason why high street banks traditionally observe such insultingly unhelpful opening hours is because, in the 1930s, the halcyon era of bank robberies, 68% of all stick-ups and bank jobs occurred before 9:30 a.m. and after 4:30 p.m. Most robbers were part-time in those days and would perform their crimes either on the way to work or on the way home after work. Schnauthaus McGraw is the largest Anglo-German banking conglomerate in the world, but in order to avoid having to pay tax in either country, its official headquarters are situated on a rubber dinghy, bobbing around in the North Sea, staffed by a single receptionist named Eldred in a wetsuit. Its chief executive, Hermann Horstrubesch, was born on a Tuesday, and makes every single one of his staff bake him a weekly cake on Monday evenings. The winner of the Tuesday morning cake tasting is given the afternoon off from banking. Some bankers feel so guilty about their industry's role in the recent worldwide economic downturn that they need an extra coffee, or sometimes a biscuit, before they start work.
Name.
Eat shit on your belly.
Age.
30.
Occupation.
Oil pipeline designer.
Location.
Lagos, Nigeria.
Question.
With some of that hindsight you mentioned, was it really wise to base the entire financial stability of the world on pretend money?
Well, Ichi, it is beginning to appear that it has been, at best, a mistake, possibly even a blooper, at worst, a full-blown economic gaffe, and one that could have been avoided with the occasional application of what is known to the layman as basic common sense. However, for a long time, the financial world has successfully and quite lucratively relied on a common-sense-averse approach. Clever financiers realise that traditional values of economy, such as balancing the books, long-term planning and mathematics, were not only, quotes, hideously outdated throwbacks to the pre-Christian era that can cut profits by up to 2,000%, but were also, quotes, really boring and, more damagingly, square. The whole thing was a classic Emperor's New Clothes scenario, only with money instead of clothes. In the famous fairy story, of course, the Emperor's plums out attire sparked a craze for non-existent clothing, and people rushed out to buy the very latest in nudie fashions. However, come winter, when everyone became bored of the embarrassment at parties wearing the same non-thing as everyone else, a panic spread through the imaginary clothes market, and everyone tried to sell their non-existent garments at the same jumble sale. They all lost quite a lot of money, and realised that they had not been quite as smartly dressed as they had told each other. And the moral of the story is, of course, always check the label. Now, the economic system all but ran out of imaginary money, and governments were reluctant to pretend to print any more of it, fearing they could risk further devaluing the original imaginary money that was still in circulation. It's all perfectly clear. Others claimed that injecting a new tranche of money that was even more imaginary than the imaginary money that had been lost could have made the latter seem more real again by comparison, and thus increase, or at least undecrease, in value. I think that's how it worked. As a general rule, however, dealing with things that do exist is usually a bit easier than dealing with things that do not exist. This is why snooker, for example, is played with physical balls rather than metaphorical ones. This issue of responsible banking being a bit square was really highlighted when an anonymous fund manager named Greville Hunge reported to the British House of Commons subcommittee on bullying in the financial services sector. Here's a recording of his evidence to that committee.
I was mercilessly teased by my colleagues, friends and bosses when I raised concerns about the safety of an investment in ice cream futures. My immediate superior, Mr.
Redacted,
humiliated me in front of the rest of my office. He put my jacket on, then he mimicked me talking in a high-pitched whine about how I didn't want to take any risks in case my pencil broke, whilst mincing around and crying like a baby. He then made me eat a whole tub of ice cream as the rest of the staff encircled me, goading me to eat it faster and faster until I got a really bad headache. He then kicked me off my chair, put a wafer in my hair and licked my cheeks. whilst everyone else chanted, "Buy, buy, 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 buy." What was I supposed to do? I gave in and bought £15 million in ice cream futures based on the next day's weather forecast being quite good. It rained and my client lost £14.8 million. But I had gained the respect of my colleagues, and that, at the time, was all that mattered to me.
Name?
Kral Shepapansky.
Age?
40.
Occupation?
House husband.
Location?
CIA HQ, Langley, USA.
Question?
My pet Labrador, Wendell, age 8, has no concept of stopping eating when he's had enough. How come the financial markets have the same level of intellectual maturity and self-control as my fat, uncomfortable dog?
Good question, Kral. The problem is that greed, like table tennis, is inherently competitive. Human beings, particularly those who work as bankers, generally only want two things, more and more. This can be illustrated by the following statement by an anonymous high-level banking chief executive given in 2008 to the House of Commons Subcommittee on Corporate Greed and General Financial Twattery.
This is read by an actor.
Statement by Sir Redacted, MBE, OBE, DSO.
These things just get out of control before you know it. It's like when you're collecting solid gold statues of British weather forecasters. If you have just bought a giant gold statue of the BBC's former badminton international Helen Willits for £50 million, inevitably you will then want to buy a giant golden statue of ITV's surfing enthusiast Becky Mountain for £80 million. Otherwise your friends and peers will think you have fallen on hard times. They could come up to you in the sauna at Claridge's or somewhere and ask, "How come you haven't bought a massive golden statue of a weather forecaster recently?" You would have to reply, "Oh, no reason. I'm just perfectly happy with my Willits. I think one giant golden meteorologist is plenty." "Oh," they would respond skeptically. "Oh, really? Are you sure about that? It's just that Dave has got an Isabel Lang and two Sarah Wilmshursts, so..." The conversation would go on. "So what?" you would say. "Look, mate," they would reply, "if you're having problems..." "No, I'm fine," you would insist. "Fine," they would hit back. "You don't look fine. You only have one giant golden weather forecaster. That is not fine in my book." "Okay," you will concede. "I'll get the Mountain and a Philip Avery for the wife." You see, this is how it all spirals out of control. But that's capitalism. These kinds of things have trickle-down benefits for ordinary people. Give it 20 or 30 years, there will be stalls on every street corner selling affordable, low-quality porcelain Carol Kirkwoods that everyone can own. So indirectly, we are all helping small business and the nation. We are. Please, can I go now?
Name?
Mike 12.
Age?
28.
Occupation?
Hypno salesman.
Location?
Grunderland.
Question.
A swift examination of the world's most successful sports stars reveals that there is a very fine line between confidence and arrogance, with heroes on one side and dicks on the other. On which side of that line has the financial world been standing?
Well, it's been standing on both sides. It is indeed a very fine line. Fine and easily straddleable. The financial world tiptoed along it for some time. Then it slipped and fell, and the line gave it a painful wedgie that it thoroughly deserved. It behaved like an economic version of the young mythological Greek lad, Icarus. With his father, Daedalus, the celebrity labyrinth designer, Icarus used special wax wings to effect an ambitious aerial jailbreak from Knossos State Penitentiary in ancient Crete. Tragically, the boy, with an overconfidence stemming from a mixture of youth and a lack of knowledge of basic physics, or rudimentary probability, ignored his old man's warning not to fly too close to the sun. Sure enough, his wings melted, and, flap as he might, the youngster smash-splash landed in the sea, copping some 100% fatal injuries with a record-breaking 32.7 non-survivability quotient. His death was not, however, pointless. He became immortalised as a symbol of the dangers of overreaching ambition, and he still retains the world record for highest altitude attained on wax wings. And, perhaps more importantly, he helped improve aircraft safety. Thanks to him, almost all of the world's leading airlines now use metal rather than wax wings. Without Icarus, it is doubtful that air travel would be popular, or indeed legal. The financial markets, having clearly only read the first half of the story, have acted in a similar way to Icarus, but taken his efforts a couple of steps further. The modern-day Icarus did not just approach the sun because he wanted to fly as high as possible. He wanted to stick a flag in it, claim ownership of it, then sell it, and buy it back again at a knockdown rate after forcing its price down by leaking a rumour that it was about to run out of fire. And then, after safeguarding his own pension and payoff, cause the sun to go bankrupt and make the rest of us live in the dark.
Name:
Boston Red Sox.
Age:
50.
Occupation:
salami developer.
Location:
Boston.
Question:
I would feel better about the world's current economic mess if I could blame someone or something for it. Someone should take the rap, and I want to give them that rap. I have the severed finger of blame in a blood-splattered envelope postmarked Credit Crunch. Into whose letterbox should I post it?
Science and history have both proved that the human soul is genetically programmed to blame someone else in times of crisis. It is just a basic psychological defence mechanism that is the human, spiritual, evolutionary equivalent of a porcupine sticking its quills out. And the blame for the failure of the banks has been thrown around like an arthritic 95-year-old woman who inadvertently entered a professional wrestling tournament.
And the nominations to be blamed for their roles in one of the biggest, silliest, and most irresponsible games of all time are... The Capitalists.
For failing to look at the economic cheese trolley and say to the waiter, "Well, it looks delicious, but I think I've had enough. That pudding has finished me off."
The Communists.
Well, if they hadn't kicked off the whole left-wing, right-wing, dick-swinging contest, then capitalism would not have felt the need to prove how tough it is by swinging a dick that wasn't its to swing through a plate glass window which it could not afford to fix.
Disgraced sprinter, Ben Johnson.
The Canadian pocket rockets studied the purity of the Olympic ideal and thus set a precedent of moral naughtiness that many in the financial sector then followed. If our athletic heroes could not maintain basic moral standards, why then should our banks and traders? Good question.
Satan.
While America playing the lead role in this unfunny comedy of errors, a good Christian country, of course, and as such, could never have sunk so low had the devil himself not been interfering.
Women. In particular, women who have abortions and the doctors who carry them out.
Well, the pro-life movement could have saved the world from economic meltdown if only people had been prepared to listen to them, because the logic goes, if more people had had more children, they would have had even less money and therefore wouldn't have been able to afford to buy the houses they already could not have afforded to buy anyway, but they'd have been able to afford it less. Yes, I think that's the point.
Al-Qaeda.
Or, as they're officially known by the Pentagon back in the day, Beardy Weedy and the Cranky Crew, well, their dastardly deeds left the Western world with no choice but to launch a series of financially ruinous wars that destabilised the entire global economy. An absolute bunch of rotters.
Actor Dan Aykroyd.
Only too happy to profit from the markets in fictional 1983 film Trading Places, but eerily quiet on the subject of impending stock market slumps in the more important real world.
The British government.
Happy to be taken for nice tasty picnics by big business, until the bell from the delicatessen landed on Downing Street's doormat.
And the advertising industry.
Its decades-long campaign to render people unable to distinguish a good offer from an obvious trap has proven to be absolutely devastating by the subprime mortgage crisis. Well, what a list of nominees for the blame for the financial crash. That is, the results will be announced in 150 years' time.
On the subject of rap, the book, and indeed this audiobook, come with a suggested hip-hop discography. First up, by Plutocrats, it's Hang Seng Horror, a strutting, arrogant rant about problems in the Asia-Pacific markets from the vulture capitalist Harlem rapper. Lil Dividend, featuring the Profit, short sell Shirley, bracket She Ain't Worth Nothing. Misogyny meets market opportunism in Dre-influenced collaboration between two of LA's smartest investor DJs, produced by Lord, formerly Sir Mix-a-Lot. Workers in Burkas, no interest, bracket Sharia the Wealth. Communist Muslim girl groups pee into the benefits of both shared ownership and the inbuilt restraints of Islamic economics. Angry two-pronged blast at Western financial structures, part public enemy, part public library. Marky Marks and the Fund Bunch, whoops, there it was, thumping bass lines and a cavalcade of obscenities from the former Speculate frontman and his new crew as they relate how they lost $10 million on a single future swap. And that's it for this week. Do enjoy those songs. If you want to come to see one of the Satirists for Hire gigs, the one this Monday, the 6th of July, I believe is sold out. There might be some returns if you contact the Soho Theatre. After that, the 7th of August 2015 in London, the Phoenix Fringe. Then I'm back at Soho the 21st of September, 12th of October and 7th of December. I'm doing shows in Liverpool at the Unity on the 17th of September, Oxford Glee, 8th of October, Brighton Comedy Festival on the 15th of October, Birmingham Glee, the 22nd of October, and in November on the 8th, the Glee in Nottingham, and the 15th, the Lowry in Salford. And I will announce further dates as soon as they are booked in. There are already some in for next year, but it seems almost stupid to even tell you about them at this stage. That is it. Next week's show will be the Satirist for Hire live from Soho Theatre, and of course you can see John on the telly and or the internet somewhere near you soon, or indeed now. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. Until next time, bye!
The music in this show was provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com.